Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking with you about some hands-on research and the experience and how beneficial it can be to students. There's a UW Summer Undergraduate Research Program, and it benefits students as well, I think, as the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. And we'll talk about the whole program today with a couple of guests. Tina Nielsen back with us. She is the Associate Director of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. And Tina, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Larry.
And Amber Smith as well, Program Director of Research, a mentor and mentee training at the UW-Madison with Science Signals Program. And Amber, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Larry.
And as you listen to these two experts talk, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments about the program. What would you like to know about bioenergy research? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call. That number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email as well to ideas@wpr.org. And Tina, let's start with you for just a minute. For those who aren't familiar with it, the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, maybe talk about that and what types of research that's going on right now.
Sure. So the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is a large multi-university center that is housed on the UW campus here. We've entered our 11th year starting in December of 2018. The first year was in 2007. And so with this new phase of funding, we've started a new mission. We've simplified our mission to be that we are creating biofuels and bioproducts that are economically viable and environmentally sustainable. And so that has many components. Traditionally, we've thought about it in four fundamental research areas, sustainability encompassing all the way from field to fuels, the different feedstocks that we use to produce the fuels and chemicals,
yeah.
A deconstruction unit, how do you take those materials apart, and then ultimately the conversion unit on how you create those products. And so what we've done in this newest phase starting this year was to tear apart the silos that might have occurred if you put them in those four research areas. And all of our projects are quite integrated between those four different research areas. Some things that we're really excited about within the new portfolio and many of the students in our research program that they participated in this summer are to do with creating bioproducts, not just biofuels, and also using conversion residue, the materials that after you ferment a batch, the leftovers, what you can do with that. That's a new activity within the center, and some of our students have done research on that this summer.
And just to bring in the Wisconsin Energy Institute as well, because they're very closely tied together.
Yep, we're housed within the Wisconsin Energy Institute, so it's a really good administrative home for us, and we can leverage a lot of the experts that have touch points with them and kind of piggyback on that research and get our research out there as well.
Amber, maybe you could talk with us. Well, first, let's talk about the Signals program and how'd that get going. What's that? What's it all about?
Sure, Larry. So the Biological Signals Summer Research Program is a 10-week program that recruits students from all over the United States as well as Puerto Rico. And the students come to participate in full-time research and professional development to prepare them to be successful in graduate school. Our work is primarily supported through a National Science Foundation grant, and through that grant, we've developed four goals for the program. First, we hope to provide an authentic undergraduate research experience with skilled mentors. The second is to diversify the pool of future research scientists. The third goal is we hope to develop our students' understanding of biological signaling concepts broadly, and we look from molecular scale all the way through ecosystem. So this is one great way where GLBRC and I come together. And then the fourth goal is that we hope to develop the students' perspective and clarity about graduate school and careers in research. So for many of these students, they've not had an opportunity to do full-time research at a large institution like UW-Madison. And so this is a great opportunity for them to try that on and see if that's a career that might be suitable for them.
Yeah. And so now, how old are these?
These students, they're all undergraduates, mostly rising juniors and seniors.
Okay. And how do we, you talked about diversifying. Diversity is an important part of this, obviously. Then,
absolutely.
What do you look for, or how do you go about getting that pool together?
Yeah, so we recruit very broadly across the United States. We're really looking for a well-rounded student, and we look at their application as a whole. We're really trying to bring in students who haven't had that opportunity. So maybe they're from an underrepresented racial or minority group. They might be students from first-generation college families or from low-income backgrounds. And then some of our students also come from just very small schools that don't have access to research.
And Tina, maybe you could talk a little bit about how the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center participates in the program and how does that work?
Absolutely. So currently we have 10 students distributed between Michigan State University and UW-Madison. We have 3 here and 7 over at Michigan State. And how we participate in it is that Amber works as a matchmaker, basically. Mm-hmm. She finds very high-quality students and looks to see which faculty on the campus would mesh well with their interests and their background and where they want to go with respect to research. And so when we were discussing this in the spring, she would pass an application to me of somebody who has met all the qualifications of the program to begin with, and then see which faculty member would be available to have a very interesting, high-impact research project for them. So GLBRC looks at this as most companies look at research interns.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we like to give them high-risk, potentially high-reward projects that you can answer a succinct question within the number of weeks that they're here. And so sometimes you don't have a postdoctoral person available or a grad student available to do that one tangent on the research that they're currently investigating, but it could have a great impact on their greater research portfolio.
So I'm trying to think of what you could do in 10 weeks. You know, as somebody who does communications research, you know, we can do things sometimes in 10 weeks, but a lot of times it takes a lot longer than 10 weeks. And you do get quite specific, which may be an example of...
Wonderful, yes. So we actually, this summer has been quite remarkable on the diversity of what we've been able to get students to do in 10 weeks. But just to put it simply, an example, we're looking at modifying organisms with a particular trait and inserting that trait into a microbe and seeing if it will produce isobutanol. So it comes down to having them learn the techniques to be able to make that modification to that microbe and then putting it to the test to see, does it actually create the product that we wanted it to create? Or can we find a community of organisms, throw that community onto a conversion residue, which might be toxic typically to microbes, and then see what's growing on there and what's not, and try to identify those different components of that community that we would then go on and maybe get their genetic code, find out what traits it is that they're using to survive on that. But it's that first step of what's actually surviving there, and then we'll build off of it. It's not like these things drop when they go off of campus. It gets handed off to somebody and it continues, but they've given it a really good head start.
Yeah. So how does it work in terms of, I mean, the students that live in dorms on campus, and then how much contact do they actually have with a professor or researcher or researchers?
Yeah, that's a great question, Larry. So all of our students do live in community. They live in an apartment just off of campus, actually. Mm-hmm. And then students typically have a faculty mentor whom they might see, you know, a couple times a week. And then they're always paired with either a graduate student or a postdoctoral fellow who's their day-to-day mentor and can really take them through all of the things they need to learn. We have several events throughout the program that faculty are involved with. So midway through the program, the students present a research proposal poster, and that really helps them to concretize their research project, make sure they really understand the background. So faculty come and give wonderful feedback there. We're just about to have our final symposium coming up on Thursday. And so for this, the students will be preparing a 10-minute talk that really summarizes the work that they've been able to do. And again, the faculty are involved all along the way, giving feedback and support.
How many years has this been going on now?
This program has been in some form or another for about 20 years.
Wow.
And within GLBRC, we've done it basically from the beginning, so about 11 years, and we've had about 150 students come through.
Wow, so there's probably some good experiences we can talk about, and we will talk about those experiences. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Amber Smith, Program Director of Research, Mentor and Mentee Training. Tina Nielsen is the Associate Director of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. Questions or comments for them, give us a call. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look today at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the research experiences that the center, the GLBRC, offers and is offering to undergraduates from across the country. Really a cool program, I think. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share. Amber Smith and Tina Nielsen, our guests, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Ideas Network Facebook page as well. So you had Michigan, you mentioned Michigan State University, and of course they are partners with UW as far as the GLBRC is concerned.
That's correct. Yep, they're our major partner. About 30% of our research portfolio is over there, leveraging the talented faculty and staff that are at Michigan State University.
You were talking about earlier about some of the bioproducts. I just want to go back to that for a minute because that was kind of intriguing. What kinds of, do you have some examples of the kinds of things that you're working on?
So with respect to bioproducts, we can parse it out into two different categories. The first is the obvious one, which is biofuels. So that is a bioproduct. But most times people say biofuels and bioproducts. So we'll explore the things that are not the biofuels. Some of them are novel fatty acids that can be used in many different forms, whether it's nutraceuticals or other high-value commodity products that they'll go into. The other main branch of bioproducts we're looking into are called terpenes, and those can then be turned into higher-value products like aviation fuels, as well as products such as cosmetics that are go for high value and make the biorefinery concept economically viable. So why the new pivot into bioproducts is that we've had some biorefineries producing just biofuels for a while now, but it's pretty hard to get those going up and running in an economically viable way. And if you run it more like a petroleum refinery and you get high value, high commercial value products like terpenes or specifically things like a squalene that has been used as a substitute from harvesting those materials from marine organisms, it's another viable way of replacing the entire barrel of oil, as well as coming up with environmentally conscious ways of replacing bioproducts from other sources that might not be ethically viable as well.
Yeah. What the heck is squalene?
Squalene is actually it's a chemical that is used in a lot of beauty products. So there is a company out in California that was producing originally biofuels, and they found that they could produce this chemical as well. And that's actually where they're making their money from. And a lot of women's products for their faces, the very expensive ones, has squalene. And typically it comes from, I think, shark fin. So to harvest sharks to get this chemical out of them is not a
Good thing.
Good thing, correct.
Yeah. So do students work on projects like this, Amber?
Sure. Most often we find that students come in and take a piece of a project that might already be in production. As you mentioned, Larry, it's hard to go from start to finish in 10 weeks during the summer, but students can take off, have a small hypothesis. We really encourage that they go through the whole process of defining a hypothesis, creating experimental design, doing the work to gather results, and then come up with some conclusions.
So, and those students, go back and remind me again, how do you select those students?
Sure. So we receive upwards of about 350 applications for our program. This year, we were able to fund 21 students between the funding that we have through WIS Science, as well as the funding through partners like GLBRC. So students, we're really looking for students that are academically high achieving. Our average GPA is about a 3.65. So just as a reference point, most grad schools, the entrance GPA is a 3.0. We're also looking for students who would benefit from the research. So in some ways, that's students that have not had a research experience. Sometimes it's students who have maybe had some small experiences but really show that they are curious and enthusiastic about it. And again, we're really trying to create a well-rounded cohort with a wide diversity of backgrounds and perspectives.
And do they pay a tuition for this? Are there scholarships, or how does that work?
Yeah, so for this program, the students receive a stipend for their work. We also cover expenses related to housing, travel, health insurance, and other university fees. One reason for that is it's really important that students can engage in research full time and that they don't have to be worried about working in order to save money for their next semester's tuition.
That makes a lot of sense, because I assume that if you're at this 10 weeks, it's quite an immersion. I mean, isn't it, Tina?
Absolutely. I have been working with the three students here to kind of give them an enhancement with being in the center and trying to find a time where the three of them can come over for a tour or go out and visit our Crop Innovation Center here on campus, just to give them an idea of all that GLBRC can provide to them. It's pretty difficult. They're really in the lab. They will say, oh, I have to run an experiment until 11 o'clock. Can we meet at 11:15? Things like that. And so they are fully subscribed while they're here, whether it's doing their research or having lab group meetings, meeting other individuals and finding out about their research on campus. It's the full picture that they consider when they bring these students in for 10 weeks.
Yeah, so they're at least 40 hours a week.
Oh, yeah.
A minimum, yeah. So we're trying to create an environment where a student can try on what it would be like to be a graduate student and what it would be like to do science for a career. And so we want them to be working in sometimes the unknown parameters of setting up an experiment, and maybe it doesn't work, and so then you do it again, and all of a sudden it's 10 p.m. at night. Of course, we care for the well-being of our students, and we hope that's not what happens every day, but we want them to have sort of a glimpse into what it would be like to be a graduate student, because we think it'll help them to both make a better choice for graduate school and that they'll be more successful once they go.
I'm wondering about, now it's been a few years, you're typically working with juniors and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So are some of those students coming back this way? I'm wondering about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we have two really great examples of individuals that were in our REU program previously and returned back to the center itself to do graduate work or postdoc work. So one of our students started here. She was from Wright State University, small university that didn't have a great research opportunity, came here for the summer, worked in our fermentation lab on the UW campus, and then decided to go to grad school at Michigan State University, and actually is part of a patent application with her PI over there, working on deconstruction of plant material. Another great example is somebody who was in the REU program here at UW, was from a very small university, worked in Professor Flagger's lab, and then ended up going to grad school here with Dr. Cameron Curry's lab, and is now a postdoctoral fellow at Georgia Institute of Technology. So we track these individuals. We have data to suggest that over 60% of the GLBRC students go on to pursue postgraduate degrees in the STEM fields. So really successful program.
Yeah, and Tina, if I may add that our numbers are pretty similar across the program as far as the number of students that go on to graduate school as their next step. And for UW-Madison, this is one of our most successful recruitment tools, is having students come from the summer research program.
And you do look for diversity, not only male and female, but minority.
Mm-hmm. First-generation students coming from a diverse background. Maybe they didn't have a research opportunity, but clearly have research brains that need to be developed through all the resources we have here at the university.
Talking today, this is really interesting to me. We're talking about the research that's going on and the research program that we have for a diverse group of undergraduate students, I should say, from across the country. It's a 10-week program that takes place here at the UW-Madison, taking a look at the bioenergy research experience for these undergraduate students, and asking you to join in with your own questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'd love to hear from you. So how do students apply for the, how do they learn about it, and how do they get going on it?
Sure. So students oftentimes hear about the program through the National Science Foundation website. All of the research experiences for undergraduates are listed there, but also through our own WIS Science website, through GLBRC's website, and then there are several other common websites that sort of create listservs of these sorts of programs. We actually have a lot of good success with word of mouth. So once students come and have great opportunity, they tell their friends back at their home institutions.
That makes a lot of sense. And what about from the faculty side, the professor's side? What kind of feedback do you get from them?
The faculty mentors are overall highly engaged and very, very happy to host these students. They find these students coming in enthusiastic, curious. They really want to be learning the research. They're adding great value to their lab. As Tina mentioned, they're doing really important research that does go on, you know, maybe it's to the core research they're doing, or even create pilot data that would allow for the next grant submission to be, you know, sort of brought to the forefront. So they're very happy to have these students.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, let's give our listeners a chance to join in again. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. And let's take a call. Susan in Marshfield, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to share that I have two sons who did some undergraduate research, one at the University in Madison and one at the University in La Crosse. And it really turned them on to science research. And they both now have PhDs.
Oh,
that's exactly what we'd
fabulous.
Like.
Oh, thanks so much for. Did they stay in Wisconsin or did they go elsewhere?
No, they're elsewhere. As a parent, just encouraging your students or child to take advantage of opportunities as they present themselves. And I can give you some more details. My son Sean, who was at UW La Crosse, he had a new professor, and he was complaining to me about the professor, and I told him to go in and talk to him. And this professor was a brand-new first job and needed a little hint on how to be a better better lecturer. But in the meantime, he offered Sean a part-time job, you know, to help him set up his research lab. And through this professor, he took them one summer out to the NIST in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And then from there, Sean went back as an intern at NIST the next summer. And he finished at the end of December, and he had applied for a PhD program. And I suggested, why don't you call NIST and see if they will hire you for the second semester? And they did. So all of his starting working for professor just opened so many doors for him.
Oh, that's a great story. Tina, a comment?
That's exactly where we want these students to head. Get that connection with the faculty member they're working with. I'll give a quick example from, yeah. I was just at Michigan State last week to see the final presentations from the 7 students over there. And what was very clear was one of the students would be a very good fit for grad school over here based on his interests and the work that he did this summer. So the faculty member they were working under is probably going to be contacting particular faculty members over here to see would this person fit well in their graduate program. So there is that connection of they've been vetted, their work ethic, their curiosity, et cetera, has been vetted through this. And now a faculty member can reach out to the people they know and say, this would be a great fit for your lab. This person will progress your research. They'll be reliable, et cetera. And that's going to be very powerful in their admissions into a graduate program, having that experience and that recommendation from the faculty member they worked with.
Yeah, I would think so. Just to getting into grad school in any department can be challenging here at the UW-Madison or probably any other major research institution. So having that kind of contact when you can get on the phone and call a colleague at another institution and say, hey, you ought to consider this gal or this guy, makes a big difference.
And with our center, we work really closely together. Even though it's Michigan State University and UW-Madison working as a partnership, we have weekly meetings with individuals. We have an annual science meeting where everybody gets together. All 450 of us have the opportunity to get together, and we present posters. A lot of the seed ideas from these 10-week programs will eventually end up on a poster. Something that came out of the symposium last week at Michigan State was the idea that all the faculty members will be keeping in contact with these students because they will probably end up on a publication, and they'll need them to proof that part of the publication before it goes to print because their name's going to be on there as an author. So keeping that connection and building your scientific network is the start of this, and it just keeps rolling after these 10 weeks.
So we don't always get along so well on the football field or the basketball court.
That's correct.
But it's totally the opposite when it comes to this sort of thing.
That's correct. Even though we only have the program at the 2 main campuses, which are Michigan State and UW, we do have 3 other campuses that are in the center, Michigan Technological University, Texas A&M University, and the University of British Columbia. So even though we don't have programs there, through those weekly research meetings, they may be on a teleconference with people in Vancouver talking about plant transformations in Poplar and learning more about that, depending on who they're assigned to for their summer program and how many other campuses they touch.
Ah, interesting. Well, let's take another call. Blake in Green Bay, it's your turn. Blake, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I'm a first-generation college student and actually went to the UW system, and I'm now staying in the state for medical school right now, completing my education. And I just wanted to comment on how important, can't be understated, these research programs for first-generation college students are. One thing that I noticed when I came to campus, and I didn't really have any parents or mentors to kind of encourage me to do research, was that it became evident that this was going to be one of the core requirements for me to attend graduate school. And so I needed to kind of cultivate those relationships on campus, and it can be very daunting if you don't have anyone who's kind of done that before. And after I had done that and participated in research at both UW-Madison and UW-Milwaukee, I came to realize the further along I went in graduate school, kind of the more of a minority I became as far as a first-generation college student. And so I think it's incredibly important for programs like this for students to be able to cultivate those relationships as you're talking about, get those publications, because I think it goes a long way towards reducing some of the disparities that we see with first-generation college students in graduate school. So I just wanted to comment on how important I think that is.
Blake, thank you so much for calling. This comments from our guests here. Tina, maybe you first.
So I'm also a first-generation college student, and I've come a long way from my bachelor's. I actually have 4 different degrees now, and every time that I matriculated to the next degree, I felt more and more comfortable because I had more of that background. But through my bachelor's, I did not get exposed to anything like this, and I know that it would have changed my trajectory. It's kind of like the microwave where it just accelerates what's happening in these students' minds, their behaviors. Amber was telling me this fantastic story. I'll let her tell you about our student from Puerto Rico and how this has changed her this summer.
Yeah,
one of the students at the beginning of the summer, I picked her up at the airport, and you know, she was a little bit unsettled, I think a little nervous about this new experience. And just last week, with these just big, bright smile, so much enthusiasm, said, "The best thing I've learned this summer is I am so confident in my ability to do research." And she said, "I can't wait to do more of it." And to me, that is the success here. We love for students to do research that gets published or has really exciting results, but it's really more about building their confidence, about giving them the skill set, helping them to navigate this new type of landscape, and to really have the skills to be successful. So I really agree with Blake that these are ways that we can provide a lot of groundwork for students who might not have had the experience or have mentors in their life that can help with that.
Blake, are you getting close to finishing?
I am. I am under a year away.
Well, congratulations.
Great. Yeah, congratulations. Good for you. And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Well, you can join in too. Number 800-642-1234. I want to go back to some more of the experiences. I was looking at some specific student experiences that I thought were really cool. There was one from Slippery Rock University. Tina, are you familiar with that one?
Yep. So the student from Slippery Rock is working. Let me step back for just a second. All 3 of the research projects that are happening on this campus are brand new to the new portfolio that we started in December. And so these are all cutting edge research that we have these 3 students doing this year. So one of the new things that we are tackling is making isobutanol rather than ethanol. So ethanol is basically off limits now for the Bioenergy Research Center program across the board, whether it's our center or the 3 other centers that are spread across the United States. And so the student from Slippery Rock is working with one of our science directors, Robert Landick, who's in biochemistry. And basically, they're taking a bacteria and trying to make biofuel, the isobutanol, more efficiently from this microbe that is industrially relevant. So the microbe happens to be called Zymomonas mobilis.
Oh my
and
goodness.
It's a very, very difficult microbe to modify. And so it used to be that we used E. coli, which a lot of people know E. coli because of food-related issues. But E. coli is a standard microbe that is used in laboratories because it's able to be edited or modified because its genetic profile is so well known. Well, Zymomonas mobilis is a new microbe for us, but it is the one that industry is pushing toward. And so if we're really going to make this viable in the future and have industry grab on to some of our ideas, we can't be using these model organisms that they might not put in their future biorefineries. But the first day I met the student from Slippery Rock, she was talking about her project, and she's like, yeah, and I'm already doing this stuff with Zymomonas mobilis. And I'm like, you're getting it to work? This thing is a notoriously picky organism to be modified. And she's like, well, I'm working on it. And so I saw her last week, and she has had progress in basically getting the organism to behave in the way that they were getting it to, wanting to have it perform to make isobutanol, which is our new fuel. So this person is hitting two different things that are new in our portfolio, which is using this non-model organism of Zymomonas mobilis, as well as trying to create isobutanol, which is a higher performing fuel than ethanol.
Okay, and that would wind up in my gas tank someday?
Yep, immediately in it. You wouldn't have to go to a special pump. It would just blend in with the gasoline that is there. So you wouldn't go up and see a pump at Quick Trip that says 10% isobutanol like they do for ethanol. It's an equivalent of
gasoline. So it would replace ethanol.
Yep, or it would be a mixable product within it.
And here's a student from Slippery Rock working
on it. Yep.
That's really cool. And there was why we didn't mention the McAllister College student, did we?
Not yet, no.
Talk about that student.
So the McAllister student is working in the Curie Lab, who has had tremendous success with REU students. We typically like to get somebody who is a good match put into Dr. Curie's lab because he gets the philosophy of the program to really develop a student that will go on to grad school and even stay possibly in the field of biofuels, or he works on a lot of community-based, looking for natural populations and then seeing which ones have the right functions that we're looking for. So with the McAllister student, they're using a community of organisms. They're dropping it onto the waste products, that conversion residue that I was talking about, and then seeing what will grow. And so early in the summer, I was talking to the student, and she said, well, nothing's growing yet. And so she was having to tinker a lot with her experimental design. And when, again, I saw her 2 weeks ago, she was getting some cultures to grow and create products off of that waste stream. So I'm very excited to see their presentations on Thursday at Union South, which is the wrap-up symposium, to see what their final analysis is. And the most exciting part about these project summary presentations is typically the last slide before the thank you slide is what the future direction is for this project. So they will put recommendations forward, two or three recommendations, saying, oh, I think that this should be the next step in this to progress it. So say there's a gene that they think will be the right one to knock out. They'll say, oh, the next step would be to see if knocking out X gene will allow for more efficient production of isobutanol in the next iteration of the research project.
Well, this is all really cool stuff, and the research that goes on here at the University of Wisconsin and Michigan State, and it's so, I mean, that our future is in the research that is going on at campuses just like this one.
Yep. I will have to state that the research over at the Michigan State program this year, obviously with seven people rather than three, it caught a lot of our research portfolio. So there were some students over there taking soil samples and looking at what's present in the microbiome there, whether it's in the rhizosphere, which is the root structure, the organisms that are in there that are either being beneficial or degrading material for the plant to use, or in the phylosphere, which is on the leaf material. There are little microbes that live there. So they were doing work in collaboration with Kellogg Biological Station, which is part of Michigan State University and where we grow a lot of our feedstocks for the whole center. And so we happened to be talking about the ones here at UW, and they're primarily based on the deconstruction and conversion research focus areas, but the areas that were touched at Michigan State combined with the areas touched here really did span our entire research portfolio this summer.
How do people find, here we are about out of time, how do people find out more about the program?
So I've been meaning to mention in some of my answers that people could go to either GOBRC.org and find our REU program specifically on there, Research Education for Undergraduates. We've also been doing on Twitter and Facebook on the Great Lakes Bioenergy sites profiles of all of the students we've had this summer. So all 10 students have had profiles of where they're from, what they were excited about this year, what their projects were. So if you didn't happen to hear about one of them and you want to see one of the 10, because they are very, very diverse, go on to either our Twitter or Facebook. But you can also go on to glbrc.org for the GLBRC-specific stuff. And I'll let Amber answer on the Signals program.
Sure. You can also find more information about the program at our website for WISCience, which is WISCience, WISCIENCE.wisc.edu.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you both with us today. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I've learned a lot, and I think everybody else listening in did too. Thank you so much, Amber.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
And Tina, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Amber Smith, Program Director of Research, Mentor, and Mentee Training at UW. Tina Nielsen, Associate Director of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. That's some cool stuff, isn't it? I tell you what. We're going to go from cool to hot, though, because we've had some hot weather across this nation, and one of our weather guys, it's a weather guy you show today, John Martin, coming up next to talk about heat waves and all things weather and meteorological. That next, here on the Ideas Network.